We're back.
Welcome back. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez, and this is This Week on Channel 9.
That's right. Yeah. So we got a lot of stuff to cover.
We do have a lot of stuff to cover. Let's get right into it. And our first story is using Azure Analytics. And this is, do you want to talk about who this is from?
Yeah. You need to switch over to that.
Okay.
This is from Steve Marks, our friend of the show, enemy of the show.
Enemy of the show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So last week we talked about Azure Analytics. Makes it easy for you to figure out how much data you're using, how often you're using that data. And so Steve Marks has been playing with this, and he put together a cool application that makes it easy to graph this over time. So he's, you know, he's famous for taking new features that show up in Azure and creating really cool apps. And so this is a cool app. It uses the HTML5 canvas to actually display exactly what's going on there.
Yeah, I think it's actually using a Java jQuery thing for graphing. So all the hard work's done by somebody else.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Way to stand on top of the shoulders of other people and take credit for their work, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is why you're an enemy of the show.
I just love winding you up. Yeah, and another thing.
Yeah.
I think it's allergic to peanut butter.
Don't get me started. Yeah.
MAVM Lite V3. So this is the Laurent Bunion's model view model Lite toolkit, version 3. And probably we've covered this a couple times. I think the coolest part here is they've actually built an installer. So the installer process before was there were basically like three different places that you had to throw files in.
Mm.
Like if you were doing code snippets, which are really handy for you know, you're mapping up where a dependency property is or something, or your locator, for example, for where a view is.
Yep.
Rewind
just a minute. This is for what application?
This is for, say, building Silverlight or WPF.
Okay.
Or Windows Phone.
Got it. Okay.
Which is, you know, Silverlight, I guess, could be both, but Silverlight, you know. So the point is, this helps build applications. The process for getting them installed was kind of a pain.
Yep.
So now it's a lot easier. And Laurent talks about some of the new versions coming as well, and some of the dates that he has timeline for, say, the next versions, beta 1.
Nice.
So cool stuff.
That's how you do it, Steve. You do real work, and then you put your name on it.
I hate to say this, but actually I think the community built the install. This is awkward. So cool stuff. Next up, multi-touch behaviors.
Yeah, so this is from David Zordon. I hope I'm saying his name right. And so this is an update to what is a really useful library if you're working with multi-touch behaviors in Phone, or if you're trying to implement inertia so that you know, maybe as you slide your finger, it can, you know, scroll at variable speeds.
Surface does that. I think a lot of people are used to that. Like, you have a bunch of images and you go like that, and depending on the force and the direction, it slows down, if you will.
Right, exactly. So super cool. It's updated to support Mango now.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Something to add to the download list.
Yes.
Next article is actually from Greg Duncan in the Connect Audio Positioning example. So this is connectaudiopositioning.codeblocks.com. And it shows off some of the things for deriving of where a sound source is and the beamform changed event. And another thing, people should look at this example, if you actually look at some of the Connect Audio libraries, is that you do get access to the confidence level of, hey, here's where I think the sound source position is, and then you can get a confidence level on how confident I am that this is the current sound source position.
So it gives you an angle then?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
It doesn't tell you it's 5 feet away. Because, of course, it doesn't know how loud it was originally.
No, but if you had an angle, you could figure out the distance using the depth camera.
Or if you had a second Kinect, you could triangulate, right?
Why would you need to? If you knew the distance from the first Kinect.
Well, that's assuming that it's a visible object and you have a camera source on it. I'm talking about ghosts here, right? We going back to your story.
We're not talking about... I'm so sick of these. What? Everything is ghosts.
It is, pretty much. But a lot of people may not know that Greg Duncan actually has a lot of these articles coming out on Coding for Fun, talking about what's going on.
Yeah,
in the
we have a dedicated section to Connect, and actually we're getting a lot of people sending in, and we're always looking for more stories. So, you know, Greg's covered a couple of Diner's projects as well.
Nice.
That we've featured, too.
Nice.
So,
Very cool
stuff.
Yeah.
So next up is Coded UI Test Enhanced framework.
Yeah, so coded UI testing is something that I'm a huge fan on. I've done a lot of presentations on this and written some hands-on labs.
And for the person who doesn't know coded UI.
Yes, so coded UI is for it's an automated UI testing framework that shipped with Visual Studio 2010. So unit tests are great for testing units of functionality, but if I want to actually test the application the way the user would, I need to simulate mouse and keyboard actions and what is this actual value on the screen look like and all that good stuff. It's great for getting started, but as you start scaling up, especially if you have like really rich composite applications or applications that have multiple pages and you want to write coded UI tests that scale across multiple versions of those pages or versions of composites, units of functionality within a broader application,
mm-hmm.
it can become difficult to actually factor your coded UI tests in a way that makes it easy to maintain. And so there's a pattern that you can use where you create what are called multiple UI maps. Unfortunately, that's very difficult to work with today. You have to do a lot of manual stuff in order to make that happen. And so now, out on CodePlex, there's a new coded UI.
Higher level, if you will.
Yeah, it's a higher level way of working with multiple UI map files, and this tool makes it, or this framework, if you will, makes it a lot easier to generate those and then work with them and maintain them over time. So I'm excited to dig into that because I actually spend a lot of time helping customers do this manually. Now this should make that piece of working with coded UI tests all that much easier.
Cool, very cool stuff.
Yeah.
So our next example is, or story, is the Isolated Storage Explorer tool. So what this tool is and why I think it's super handy is you're building apps and maybe a lot of time you're building in the emulator.
This is Windows Phone.
This is Windows Phone. Good mm-hmm. call. And you want to see the content of the isolated storage. So this is a command line tool that basically lets you see the contents of your application. So you can see, for example, like, hey, why am I having this weird auth issue? And it's because maybe there was some character saved in an auth token. So you send some user ID, password, you got an auth token back, and there's something weird going on. Or that token isn't being flushed. You can see what's actually going on. Here are the app settings for my application, like the authentication token. Or here are the files and images. Let me see why,
right.
maybe an image is corrupt or something like that.
So this is a command line tool.
Command line tool for
Mango.
Yes, for inspecting. It ships in the SDK beta. I think mm-hmm. it started shipping in the beta. And I just think it's really handy for when you're diagnosing what's going on in isolated storage,
mm-hmm.
so your application works as you're working, say, with the emulator, and I think it even works with the regular phone as well, to see kind of what's going on and how those settings are being loaded. And that seems easy, and you can remove data as well, which is a nice thing.
So this is, it's only a matter of time then before somebody builds a really nice GUI component, shell extensions, all that good stuff. I would hope. I mean, seems like it's a step away from that.
Sure. If you're signing up,
I got nothing else going
on. It's all nighter.
Okay.
But I think you can do it.
All right. Sounds good. I'll do some real work and show Steve how that's done.
I don't think you're going to work.
No, probably not.
Which brings us to our cool new story. I love this demo. It's a Sudoku webcam solver. So this is in C++, and the idea is it actually takes a webcam, has a still image. You convert the Sudoku puzzle to black and white. It does detects the rotation angle, so like the camera maybe at a slight angle where you want to have it have the outside of the square be flat, and then it locates the grid lines. So now it knows where all the stuff is, and then it locates the digits, and then based on the Sudoku rules, like you can only have one number in one spot,
mm-hmm.
it can say whether the OCR failed, and then it actually solves the puzzle. So this is insane.
This is
awesome.
Going to save me so much time.
I don't even need to read the paper.
No, I don't. Yeah, I can just say. Now this is really cool. Actually, I mean, there's a lot of components that I can imagine being useful to other applications, especially since it's
OCR is one of those things where
yep.
a lot of people are looking for examples, and this is again on Code Project, but
that's cool. One thing that I think would be really cool, filling out your taxes every year, and you've got to manually take all that data and like just read through it, make sure you look at the W-4 or what is it, the
W-2,
and translate that data into whatever package you're using. It'd be great if I could just hold it up to my webcam, have it take all that information, and then pump it into the software that I'm using. That'd
sure.
be really nice. Yeah. I'll do that when I'm done with the other application.
That's actually a really interesting idea. There's a lot of stuff that I'm sure people have to do as well. Same thing with forms or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, cool. Like it. There you go. $100 idea. Yeah. Right? Brian Keller. He's full of them. Code first migrations. So our friend Scott Hanselman talks about code first migrations, which is a tool by the Entity Framework team. And this is really an alpha tool, but the idea is you can use code to migrate your application. So doing changes in code, and you can see here and kind of what's possible and easy to do, and
what do you mean migrating my applications?
Migrate my data or change my data. So for example, I have changes in my database, and I want to do those programmatically, right? Or I'm changing my data schema. And I'm using code-first programming, meaning I am starting with a set of classes that represent my entities.
Yep.
I can, for example, change the class, refactor the class, and have those changes go back to the database. And there's a number of things there. And really, I mean, you should just read Scott's article for all the full details, because it is an alpha. So if people are looking for, and there's a number of caveats in there as well in terms of things it doesn't do well. And even, Scott mentions that the team's looking for feedback on how it generates scripts, for example, to do this, because a lot of times you aren't going to be doing this. You're going to want it scripted out, so moving between. And they're looking for feedback.
And this is the Magic Unicorn edition?
Yeah, he actually talks about that, but it's the August CTP of Code First Migrations, and even then, that needs to work with a certain version of EF as well. So, read the article for all the full restrictions.
Okay, it looks cool. I'm a big fan of the Visual Studio database projects and what that brings to the table in terms of helping you to version control your schema. So, this looks promising. I'll have to dig into that.
Yeah, yeah. Cool stuff. Yeah. So, which brings us to Picks of the Week!
Picks of the Week!
Yeah, so my...
Is that your head on the table? What is that?
That is actually a picture of me. I don't know if you can see. That's what I'm made from. So that is something called Kinect Fusion that was shown at SIGGRAPH. And this is actually from the shot at on Engadget.
Mm.
So you can go check out the pictures, but the idea is you can actually use Kinect and build 3D models based on what you're seeing using the depth data.
So this doesn't just give you a 3D render. This is actually a model that I could then import, presumably, into Max and Maya and then build a video game around?
Yes.
Okay, I'll do
yes.
that next
or,
weekend.
Or a different... You could definitely do it on a per object.
Mm-hmm.
The examples that they were using were like a scene, like rebuild the 3D perspective of a scene. So it's like you could rebuild this room, and then you can get the 3D perspective of all the room and fly in the room and actually see all the stuff. So,
wow.
So in the picture we see here, like a Kinect going around that thing, you can actually build a full 3D model and explore that 3D space. And of course, they always have to have a teacup.
Wait,
Have you noticed that? It's like the hello world of 3D models.
It is. You're right. That's hilarious. I didn't even realize that, but yeah, you're right.
Which I thought was funny. Yeah. So check it out. Real-time 3D is pretty hot stuff, and using all that motion sensor stuff is
I can't
cool.
wait till 3D printers are affordable, and I can just have
They're
a 3D
like $1,000.
Are they now?
Yeah.
What do you fill them up with?
There was actually a conversation with Laurent and Clint on this, on how we can use this together. And I think there was a Kinect project that was doing some very basic 3D printer stuff, but they're very slow.
Sure. But what do they print out? What is the material?
I think it depends on the site.
All right.
I haven't played with one to know.
Bing it. Okay.
Bing it. Which brings us to your pick of the week.
Yeah, my pick of the week. So this is actually not available right now, but Brian Harry put together a really great post about the August update of the TFS 2011 Power Tools. And I didn't want to miss any here, so I have my top 10 list here.
Okay.
Number 10, login for Windows
Houdini?
Shell. Yeah, so you know that we've got this Windows Shell extension that you can use to treat Windows Explorer basically as your source control. Unfortunately, that only works with Windows authentication. So if you're connecting to a server like CodePlex or eventually to the Team Foundation server hosted service that we're working on,
you don't have the cloud.
Yeah, you don't have the ability to plug that stuff in. So that's being updated to support those. those things. Number 9, actually, I don't have 10 on this list, so I should stop pretending like it's a number 10 countdown. Work item search. A lot of people ask for this. In fact, it's the number 14 request on our user voice site.
Yeah.
Being able to do work item search in Visual Studio. It's one of those features that we thought we'd get for a long time, and it just always fell right below the cut line. Now it's available as a power tool. It's also in Dev 11, so that's cool. Rollback in the UI. So I just check something in. I want to roll back to an earlier version. Right now it's a command line tool, not very discoverable. So finally in the UI you can do this. And then some things that are important to a handful of people. So like Maven 3 support, Ant support, Maven 2, build automation utilities to make you
Java developers are going to be excited about that stuff.
Sorry, I shouldn't say handful of people. I should say subset of people.
Handful.
Yeah. I have big hands.
You just assume everybody's in J#, okay? There's more than...
Everybody's not in J#. Are you kidding me?
The Java world is not in J#.
Exactly. And then test attachments cleaner, that's something that's available separately being rolled in, and then an update to the best practices analyzer. So
cool.
Coming soon. He's promised August, so we'll see how long.
And I love his post again because it does all the wonderful screenshots.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, man. So that's our show, and thank you to everyone.